Yorkshire. In Scotland, a wet all day with hill fog patches, outbreaks of rain pushing northwards and eastwards, and the rain could amount to around 20 to 40 millimetres of rain across the west, threatening potentially a little bit of localised flooding, perhaps the rain turning a bit more showery late on in the day, and highs of 9 degrees Celsius. That's the way the weather's shaping up. It's back to Mairead.
Thanks, Chris. Chris Fawkes there at the BBC Weather Centre. Now our Book of the Week, and more from the story of an English woman caught in occupied France. Why did she cross the Channel in the first place? Her nephew, Nicholas Shakespeare, reads from his recent account, Priscilla.
From my grandfather's diaries, I formed a picture of Priscilla's early years. She was born in the summer of 1916 to Stuart Mace, a teacher at Sherborne who everyone knew by his initials, SPB, and Doris, the pampered daughter of a retired major. The marriage was a catastrophe from the start. Priscilla grew up listening to SPB remonstrate with her mother, "But you loved me once," and Doris snapping back, "I may have liked caper sauce once, but I've outgrown my love for you." When Doris left SPB for another man, SPB's one consolation was his daughter. Thank God, he wrote, there was still Priscilla. But when Doris took up with yet another lover, this time moving to Paris, SPB brought home Winnie Doughty, a teenage Irish model. Less than a year later, a dismaying entry in SPB's diary reads, "I sent a cable to Doris, telling her she could keep Priscilla, just to make Winnie happier." It was a rejection from which Priscilla never recovered. In 1926, Priscilla, a skinny, nervy child, tall for her age, with pale, lank hair scraped back from her face, exchanged her father's literary circle in Hove for a worldly expatriate clique in Paris, which was promiscuous and gossipy. It was in Paris that she met Gillian Sutro, who was to become her greatest girlhood friend. Their rackety backgrounds were interchangeable to a striking degree. "Pris and I were birds of a feather," was how Gillian described their friendship. They would grow up together, attending the same lycée and sharing a governess and ballet teacher. Priscilla was 16 when her mother brought her back to London to live. But she would return to Paris only 5 years later, on a fine spring day in 1937. The reason for Priscilla's return was that she was 3 months pregnant. The encounter that marked Priscilla's whole life took place at a moment when she least expected kindness. She'd caught the train from Victoria with £5 in her pocket, borrowed from a friend. She felt sick and young and very frightened. Being under 21, she had needed her parents' consent for a new passport. She had sent a wire to her mother, asking her to come urgently to London. Doris, self-engrossed as ever, offered Priscilla no sympathy and no financial help. "Perhaps this will teach you a lesson," she wrote down the address of an abortionist in Paris. When Priscilla asked her father for £50, saying that her life was at stake, he refused. SPB was by then a well-known broadcaster for the BBC, but he was covered in debts following her mother's divorce case. Priscilla's only option was to go back to Paris, where she was confident of Gillian's support. Priscilla followed the crowd onto the boat, found a deck chair, and opened her book. After a while, she grew aware of someone standing beside her. His name was Robert, and his family, deeply conservative and Catholic, Priscilla gathered, was one of the noblest in the north of France. He must have been about 40. She explained to Gillian, "He told me afterward he felt sorry for me. He said I was like a cork in a rough sea, being tossed hither and thither." He asked if she was going to Paris. She replied that she was. He produced his card and made her promise to ring him. A young woman stood in a haze of ascending steam at Gare Saint-Lazare. At the sight of Priscilla, she ran forward. Dressed in black, slender, with dark wavy hair, Gillian had grown beautiful. They embraced. Gillian had booked Priscilla into a 10-franc hotel on the Boulevard Raspail. Before the week was out, Robert invited Priscilla to dinner. Priscilla felt a surge of relief to hear his voice. Robert had jet-black hair and a dignified face, but his best features were his hands. They were slender and well cared for, like a Byzantine saint's. She found him soothing and different from the juvenile South African she had left behind in London. The only way for a girl in Priscilla's position to deal with her problem was dangerous and clandestine. After the abortion, Gillian sat through the night beside her in Robert's apartment in Rue Nollet. Next morning, to Gillian's relief, Robert took charge. Priscilla told Gillian, "I'm finished with the physical side of life forever." It was almost a relief to discover that Robert did not seem to mind either. It was a beautiful spring. Priscilla's memories of this time are full of gaps, but her itinerary is possible to follow because Gillian made lists of the cafes and what they ordered. A tournedo at the Café de Paris, a chocolate cake at Rumpelmayer, dinner at Drouan, and who they saw. The artist Christian Berard waddling out of the Café de la Paix, beard, hair, clothes spattered with paint. And one afternoon, outside the Café Flore, Picasso, sprawled in the back seat of a chauffeur-driven Hispano-Suiza with a pile of canvases. After a year in Paris, still uncertain of Robert's intentions, Priscilla travelled to England. In London, she had tea with her father at Bendix. SPB wrote in his diary, "She's tremendously attractive, and it's hard for me to talk to her." Doris had for too long indoctrinated Priscilla with bitterness towards him. On the 30th of September, hours after the signing of the Munich Agreement, Robert sent a telegram to Horsham, where Priscilla was staying with her grandmother. "Please return immediately. Stop. War imminent. Stop. Wish to introduce you to Mother." The Douanel Chateau of Bois Grimaud lay on the edge of the village of Saint-Denis. Small dogs pressed their noses into her skirt as Priscilla stepped down from the pony trap. Robert's mother, Adelaide, stood on the steps, a small, very old, alert-faced woman. She kissed Priscilla with some affection. About 20 Douanels stood waiting in the drawing room, Adelaide's 7 surviving children and their families. Priscilla's overriding impression was how ancient they were. A woman from the village served the meal. Priscilla's gaze faltered over the main course, a slim slice of goose breast like the sole of a ballet shoe. Robert's sister-in-law, Yolande, watched for Priscilla to do the wrong thing. When finally Robert proposed in the febrile last days of September 1938, she accepted. The date was set for the 15th of December. On their wedding night, Robert went calmly to sleep in her arms. His impotence was disastrous for the marriage and for her. When war was declared in August 1939, Robert was mobilised and ordered to a unit near Rouen. Paris was militarised. Priscilla was to stay at Bois Grimaud in the care of his mother. The chateau overspilled with evacuated Douanels. At night in the drawing room, where Yolande stood in for her husband Georges, they prayed for peace. At last, a letter from Robert. He had found a primitive billet on a farm. He was working in an office as a corporal, the same rank he'd held in the First World War. In November, with money saved from modelling, Priscilla bought a second-hand grey Simca and announced to Adelaide that she intended to motor to Rouen to join Robert. In Rouen, Priscilla joined the YMCA, transporting canteens to the Belgian border. Robert was depressed, but buoyed by her youth, Priscilla refused to be gloomy. The trams in the evenings were packed with English soldiers, and Priscilla was invited by officers to cocktail parties and out dancing. Although she remained faithful to Robert, she did have one tenacious suitor she nicknamed the Scarlet Pimpernel. In one of the long, uncertain days of late spring, Priscilla made an excursion to Paris to see Gillian Sutro, standing all the way in a packed train. They had dinner at Prunier's. Gillian's lover, the artist Marcel Vertes, was with her, and Gillian was the happiest that Priscilla had seen her. But only days later, on Sunday the 9th of June, Gillian was escaping from France on a battered cargo ship bound for England. In Rouen, Priscilla said a hurried goodbye to her husband and drove west in her Simca. German planes in tight little groups with black crosses on their wings flew over with a roar. The invasion had been rapid, the German army advancing at the speed of their tanks. The Douanelles were back at Bois Grimaud in force. One of Priscilla's admirers, an Irish Guards officer, managed to telephone from Cherbourg. Leave right now, and he could squeeze her onto a boat. But she refused. I have to stay, to learn Robert's fate. On the 25th of June, the armistice came into force. Priscilla had become an alien with the signing of the armistice. It was forbidden to speak English. A German officer in a scarlet lined cloak. He strode into the house and saluted Adelaide. He was requisitioning the chateau. In the summer heat, the captain's men lay on the grass with their shirts off, studying maps of England and plotting the inevitable invasion. Every day brought a fresh decree. The tricolour was banned. The word Boche forbidden. On the 23rd of August, a new decree. English women had to go daily to their local police station to sign a book. What are you going to do? Yolande asked. Ignore it, Priscilla replied. I reckon I could pass as a Frenchwoman at any time. The problem of Priscilla continued to absorb them until, in a flurry of news, all three sisters-in-law learnt that their husbands were alive. Georges was expected at Bois Grimaud shortly. Guy had been captured and sent to a POW camp in Germany. Robert was a prisoner in a camp near Chartres. On the 15th of October, a further decree. Any citizen sheltering or housing a British citizen must immediately declare the name of this person and their whereabouts. Priscilla refused when Yolande bustled her into the bathroom and hissed that she had to flush her passport down the lavatory. On his arrival home, Georges held a family conference about Robert's English wife. If Priscilla was so pig-headed that she would not give up her British passport, why should the Douanelles risk death to protect her? You can't stay here. Georges' voice was emphatic. Go back to your flat in Paris. Terrified, she caught a train to Paris and registered with the préfecture as an enemy alien. Lonely, hungry, cold, she found the telephone number of the Scarlet Pimpernel. He was delighted to hear Priscilla's voice.
Nicholas Shakespeare was reading from his recent book Priscilla, which was produced by Duncan Minchell. And dreams of the Scarlet Pimpernel are short-lived at the same time tomorrow. Now, the shipping forecast issued by the Met Office on behalf of the Maritime and Coast Guard Agency at 0015 on Wednesday, the 15th of January. There are warnings of gales in Viking, North Utsira, South Utsira, Forties, Cromarty, Fisher, Fitzroy, Sole, Shannon, Rockall, Malin, Hebrides, Bailey, Fair Isle, Faroes, and South East Iceland. The general synopsis at 1800. Atlantic low moving southeast, expected just west of Rockall, 972 by 1800 Wednesday. The area forecast for the next 24 hours: Viking, North Utsira, South Utsira, northeast 40s. Easterly or southeasterly, 6 to gale 8, occasionally severe gale 9, except in North Utsira. Occasional rain, moderate or good, occasionally poor.